Welcome to Inner Life on KMUN 90.9 FM. My name is Megan McFeely. Today on Inner Life, I will speak to a local creative, Cliff Taylor. He is a member of the Ponca Tribe of Nebraska. He's a writer, poet, speaker, and storyteller. He has written several books about the direct experience with sacred life, the almost forgotten ways that humans relate to the living universe. He's the great-grandson of Chief Standing Bear, and in his honor, I will read a quote I found, "Our first teacher is our own heart." So, Cliff, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
I'm so happy to be talking to you because I've read two of your books, and I was really compelled and touched. But so I know that having an inner life is not unfamiliar to you.
I've got one.
You've got one. But I'm curious to know when you became aware that you had it. And is there like an experience that you had?
You know, I've been thinking about this interview all day. And it's really fun to let your thoughts swim around the concept / reality of inner life and what it is. Mm-hmm. And of course, you always go back to your beginnings, your origins, your earliest experiences, your childhood, to kind of track or trace the beginnings of this thing called your inner life. And, you know, there's a number of things came up, but I guess I want to say, as a bicultural person growing up in a small Midwestern town in Nebraska in the 80s, right away, I was aware that I have this different flow of experience that makes sense to my native family and that is kind of seen differently, perceived differently, judged differently by the non-native public, my non-native peers, my non-native peers' parents. Mm. So right away, I got good at understanding that I have this internal flow of experience, and then there's the outer world, and it is very beneficial to learn how to manage what is happening inside of you. So that right away became like just inner life basics for a kid figuring stuff out in his little 80s Nebraskan mind.
You know, Carl Jung spoke that he had two personalities, the inner personality, and it came to him when he was very young, like 6 or 7, and the outer personality. But I don't think this is the experience of most people. I mean, as a child, I had, you know, psychic type capacities. You know, I knew what people were thinking, you know, but that all went away and I integrated with the collective, you know, but you've maintained. So is your awareness, most youngest awareness of knowing that was slightly different? Do you have a time or any experience that you might want to share?
You know, I want to share an element of an experience I had without sharing the experience.
Okay, that's fine.
I spent the first 5 years of my life living with my mom in these college dorms while my mom was getting her teaching degree in Wayne, Nebraska. And I experienced something and I just almost like I spontaneously had this understanding that the public at large would judge this experience as negative, but I knew that it actually was something beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if I kind of shared about that experience in my own little like 3.5-year-old mind or 4-year-old mind, I knew that it would almost get, I'm going to say, manhandled by folks who didn't understand its real essence. And because I had direct contact with what its real essence was, at least I perceived myself as having direct contact with it, my little 3-year-old heart or 4-year-old heart. I decided to kind of keep it to myself to, I want to say, like, preserve its quality and its integrity. Yeah. And that became a theme.
Yeah.
That, that singular, almost like mini epiphany I had at age 3 or 4 about that particular experience grew into a theme for my whole life,
yeah.
You know, in terms of navigating my people's spirituality, navigating mm-hmm. my people's culture, navigating my people's ceremonies, our experiences, our inner worlds, our inner lives.
So when you say that, do you mean the holding of it? The holding of it and the holding of it and knowing that it's sacred and not sharing.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Knowing how to care for what you have been blessed to experience
mm-hmm.
with your organs of experience,
mm-hmm.
with your consciousness,
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
your soul, with your mind, your imagination, with your heart, which,
right.
you know, if you get into the inner life, you right away begin to understand that these organs of perception and being and consciousness are far, far, far larger than the culture at large lets us know in general, you know?
You know, I was an extrovert and I would share. And I just shared and I would scare people.
No,
but, you know, I didn't have anything dramatic happen. But, you know, here and there, I never really learned. This is the truth. I never really learned not to share. And guess what happened? It went away. Like that access to that place, that sacred place inside myself went away. I'm going to cry. But that's what happened. And then, of course, I tried to, you know, fit into the collective. And then I, you know, met a teacher and I had a path and I had to relearn this holding. It's not my nature. I'm an extroverted Aries, you know. Well, you don't know what an Aries is, but So it was, and I'm still, I want to share. That's like kind of my impulse. I think it's part of my nature. But if I don't share, I lose something so sacred and valuable to myself. And then you just feel it in your heart, you know, that you've made a mistake.
As some listeners, a select number of listeners, but probably the larger number of listeners, or as folks may or may not know, I work at the Astoria Co-op here, if that's okay to say. I work at the local
yes,
co-op.
Yes.
And earlier today, I was helping a customer. And she was saying, you know, it's like, oh, I'm sorry I'm taking up your time. I know you have important stuff to do.
Mm.
And, you know, I flashed back to being in one of the first ceremonies I went to when I was 21. And it was conducted by this Vietnam vet who is now passed, a man named Bill Acord. And in that ceremony, he said, the purpose of life is helping others.
Mm.
So I just flashed back to that. And I said, you know, we're all here just to help each other. And, you know, Bill never said that again. It wasn't like some standard thing that he was just kind of like, you know, tossing at everybody like a penny from a roll of pennies. But when he said it, I really felt it.
Mm.
And it's like you know, my young self spent the next 10 years, I want to say, like, exploring the potential / probable truth of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that is true. You know, mm-hmm. the purpose of life is helping others.
Mm-hmm.
And just as I hope this conversation does,
mm-hmm.
you know, one big way to help others in these times is to talk in a good way about the experiences we have,
yeah.
about our inner lives, about the stuff that really composes who we are,
yeah.
stuff that maybe, you know,
gives our life meaning. Gives our life meaning.
Yeah, and I think I mean, yeah. because I feel like as a native guy, I'm kind of trying to always deconstruct, reimagine, rewrite, and recode this mass culture that we're all kind of in the environment and the flow of. But this mass culture is really good at stigmatizing and shaming, you know, huge swaths and huge parts of our what
our
is
experience.
Natural
yeah.
to
yeah.
Our inner lives,
yeah.
to our experience as people.
That is why, you know? I'm doing this show.
Yeah.
Just to make it normal.
Yeah.
Because we all have it. We don't have to be afraid of it. As a matter of fact, it is a really important and meaningful element of being human.
Yeah.
You know, it gives us, you know, meaning, like I've said. So,
well, I write a lot of poetry, and
yeah.
all inside of all of my poems are prayers. Mm-hmm. And I always say it's like, it's not because I'm anybody special, but just because, you know, this is what's important to me. And this is what has is important to my culture, and is what is important to my ancestors. And it's like the system of what is important has been communicated down through the ages,
mm-hmm.
from ancient times into us. And my culture is always singing the songs of those things and telling the stories of those things. And so I continue to do the same. And one way is through my poetry. And one of those prayers inside of my poetry is that I want to say, like, people fall in love with their own humanity.
Mm.
People trust their own humanity.
Mm.
People find ways to help their humanity blossom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of this kind of, you know, so much of our conditioning, so much of what we've learned about what's right, what's wrong, who I can associate with, what's good, what's bad. A lot of that is imposed
upon
humanity.
Yeah.
And our humanity possesses so much innate, inborn intelligence and wisdom that if you get it brewing, if you get it stewing, it just starts to bubble with
yeah.
all this beauty
yeah.
that is, you know, naturally guiding,
yeah.
that's naturally helpful,
yeah.
that naturally puts us on the path of both being ourselves and finding ourselves.
Yes.
You
wow.
know?
I love
so
that.
It's good to talk about this human stuff.
It really is.
And give people permission to
you know,
talk about it, feel it, about
I
it.
I talk to everyone
about
this, Cliff.
Yeah.
I mean, I talk to people on the airplane.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't get negative responses. You know, I start sharing something of mine, and I'll say, you know, I'm a little sensitive, and maybe I'm a little different, but I think this is everyone's experience. I just normalize it because, like you've said, I'm going to say this, there's something deeply missing, and we're hurting for it. You know, we don't have the relationship to the sacred. We don't have a relationship to the land as sacred, you know, any longer. We don't know ourselves as sacred beings. And we've gotten so disconnected from what's real and what's loving. And so this is my little attempt to say it's okay to explore this stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'm all about it myself. And
I have a question. So when you began, you started really getting into the ceremonies, and that
yeah.
opened you more and more and more. Mm-hmm. Since we, as non-native people, I mean, we're native to somewhere. I'm sure the Celts had something when I, you know, my people, but we don't have access. And I'm wondering what you would suggest people do in order to connect deeply to themselves.
You know, I will say this. I spent the first 34 years of my life in Nebraska. I kind of jokingly call it like Planet Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left, and I lived in Seattle. I lived in New Orleans, and now I've been on the Oregon coast for the past 7 years. And when I lived in Nebraska, I only did ceremony with my people. And then when I left Nebraska, I found myself getting invitations to all kinds of stuff. And so it just expanded my experience
mm-hmm.
of what ceremony is, of
mm-hmm.
you know, different things people do to, you know, to connect, to heal, to find their soul,
mm-hmm.
to promote community, to get close to Mother Earth. And you know, I want to say it's like everybody has this really powerful, beautiful starting place. And if you just begin to sincerely investigate,
mm-hmm.
sincerely inquire, sincerely get curious, get passionate. If you're a person who's about prayer, you know, get prayerful about it.
Mm-hmm.
The whole world is going to start to bend and twist to assist that starting point, that starting point's becoming of a path. Because I do think the cosmos itself, the larger creation itself, the other world itself is really, you know, here to help us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the stuff you're talking about is exactly what we need help with, because I think the, you know, the global capitalist materialist culture, you know, it wants to turn human beings into tiny controllable pieces. And the best way to do that is to snip all of the connections that human beings have to their own soul. Because yeah. Inside of your soul
is
there's
guidance.
This bundle of pre-existing relationships with everything you just said.
That's right.
And they just unfold into being. You have a pre-existing relationship with Mother Earth, a pre-existing relationship with your ancestors, a pre-existing relationship with, you know, the
cosmos.
Infinite divine being that generated all of existence.
Yeah.
You have all these pre-existing relationships that are, you know, they're ready to unfold. And if you give time, attention, sincerity, and love to your soul, that's the sunlight, that's the water, and that's the food that will activate and initiate all those natural unfoldings. And then as those relationships, you know, sprout into being, it's a two-way street. So the ancestors, Mother Earth, you know, the divine mystery, they all start to pour life back into you. And
that's
it becomes
right.
This reciprocal relationship system of meaning, craftiness, depth, mystery, joy, beauty, intelligence.
I don't have to say a thing because you're saying everything. So I'm going to take a break here. This is The Inner Life on KMUN in Astoria at 91.9 FM. So when you were talking about, you know, life runs towards you, or, you know, you just take a step, but it has to be authentic. And I also had that experience. I went out to the ocean and it was this storm because I had gone through so much and I was inside bottled up. I didn't know what to do. I was screaming at the sky, "What do you want from me?" You know? And that was the moment where everything started to move for me. And each step I took, I felt there was a hand underneath my foot. The next step, a hand underneath my foot. But one thing I wanted to tell you is the Sufis say, if you turn towards God, God comes running at you. Oof. And that is exactly what it was you were describing there.
Yeah. I mean, I also, you know, I've been a meditator for 25 years since my teen. I'm about to turn 45, so maybe longer than 25 years. And when I was a teenager, I had all kinds of spiritual experiences, dreams and visions and ecstasies and, you know, transcendental stuff and such.
Transcendentalists.
Yeah. And one thing that I don't talk about my meditation practice as much, but I'm hoping that this year will be the year where I talk about it a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Sufi folks are into meditation, mm-hmm. or at least a number of the different lineages and branches that I've had the
meditation
honor to read about.
Of the heart. Yeah.
Okay.
A meditation of the heart.
Yeah. And it's like, I want to say, like, if you meditate for a short time or you meditate for a long time, you're going to have these, you know, glimpses of how reality is structured, glimpses of how the universe is structured, glimpses of how our lots, our fates, and our destinies as human beings are structured.
You know, Cliff, I would like to say maybe, because not everyone has the same experiences,
yeah.
you know? I mean, that would be great, but maybe. And I think the most important thing about meditation is learning to be silent.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe you'll be shown the universe,
mm-hmm.
but maybe you will never be shown the universe. But what does matter is that you learn to listen to yourself. And that for me was so much of a struggle. You know, I was externally focused, getting all my cues from the outside. And so trying to be quiet and softening my gaze is something that didn't come naturally. And it's been, you know, part of my practice. So meditation is key for trying to relate to yourself in a different way. And another thing I did is I would feel my body.
Yeah.
I was a gymnast and I didn't feel my body. Mm. I just used my body. And it's funny, you think maybe a gymnast would know their body. In a certain way, they do.
Yeah.
But in another way, they don't. So another part of my practice is just I actually would lie on the ground and try to feel my body, you know, the energy moving in my body, my feet, my fingertips, you know, the whole of it, piece by piece, so that there was a not an avoidance. Like, I think often there's an avoidance of wanting to let everything in, you know? Mm. And so for me, those were two important practices, just silence and really, really feeling the essence, the vibration, the movements, everything inside of my body.
It makes me think of, I'm actually keeping myself short as a native guy. You know, I want to get long-winded and tell all these big stories all the time.
Yeah, we got 10 minutes.
Okay, so we'll keep it relatively short. But one time there was this old man, and I was talking to him at a powwow, and he's a spiritual man, spiritual leader. And, you know, I've been a Sundancer for over 20 years. And at the Sundance, we have this tree that we dance around. And this old man was talking to me about the Sundance tree. And he said, you know, that Sundance tree is just like a Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. He said, there's all these presents waiting around that tree. And if you kind of feel the call and then you follow that call to show up and to dance and to do your part, he said, that present that was waiting for you will come to you.
Mm.
And that's a shorter version of what he shared. But I think it communicates this principle that is very true and alive in this conversation for all of us. And it's what came to mind when I was listening to you. And that is, there's always something waiting to flow to us.
Mm-hmm.
And whether we decide we got to go to some place special and sacred on the other side of the planet, or we just get a little still inside of ourselves,
mm-hmm.
because of the generosity of the divine,
mm-hmm.
the moment we do the little thing or the big thing, something's going to begin flowing to us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that something is the substantial stuff of real spirituality.
But I do think that being authentic is the most important thing. It has to be, you know, like, I had this question inside of me. It was this question that had lived in me since I was very young. And I realized that it essentially was the call. It was a call inward. And that if I held the question and really held it as something so sacred to me, that it would call to me, or me go to flow to it, what was necessary or what was needed. And my prayer was always, what is needed from me, you know? And so I can't remember what my next question was.
Well, I mean, I wrote in preparation for this as a poet, I actually wrote this sonnet about the inner life. I should have brought it with me and I would have read it. But the last line of it, I think, was truth is as essential as water and love. And it is in our inner life where truth resides. And that was kind of the summary of
Beautiful.
The poem. Because
wow.
ultimately, why is our inner life important?
Mm-hmm.
It's because truth is there. Truth is important.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say, like, mm-hmm. yeah, I want to like talk Nebraska style, maybe Nebraska coffee shop style, and say it's good to be true when it comes to the truth. And mm-hmm. when you say authentic, that's what that makes me think of.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
to be honest, mm-hmm. to be real, to be true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of our culture, speaking of my people's Ponca culture, a lot of it is designed about being honorable,
mm-hmm.
living in a good, honorable, true way.
Mm-hmm.
And honor is rooted in truth and authenticity, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. the makeup and the essence of who you really are.
I know this is a question that takes us kind of back to the beginning, but, you know, I was in India listening to a Lama speaking, and there was this woman from New York in the audience, and she said, "What do I do with my anger?" And the Lama said, "You don't have anger." And she said, "Yes, I do. What do I do with this anger?" And I was watching a cultural divide right there, right? The Tibetans they just have a very different relationship to it. And I was thinking, she needs therapy. You know, she needs to understand how to get to the root of that and understand that and give herself some love, you know?
Yeah.
And did you have to do that work? Like psychological aspect?
Oh, big time.
Yeah, right.
Big time. Yeah, I mean, that's like, I had a mentor, and she's like, you got to have compassion. She's like, if you want to be a spiritual person, you got to have, you know, compassion.
Yeah.
You got to have contact with the other world. And I can't remember exactly how she phrased it, but she said, like, you got to have psychological savvy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you mm-hmm. can't, if you have any two, but not the three, or one, but not the three, you know, at least to that elder of mine, you're missing,
mm-hmm.
you know, so you can't ignore, you know, our psychological being.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ignore the other world, and you can't ignore, you know, compassion,
yeah.
which is
yeah.
full of the truth of why we're all here,
yeah.
to help each other,
yeah.
to help life, to help the hoop of life, to help the plants, the animals, the past, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. ancestors, the future, the unborn, you know, all the ones who are swirling in this big sacred story that makes up existence.
That's yeah. right. The I had to start with the basics, and the basic was, why am I hurting so much, you know? And like I said, I then was led to the next thing and to the next thing and to the next thing, but it was that authentic question that opened the door for me. And for a long time, it was about me, you know? And then at a certain point in my life, it became a responsibility that I have to the whole, that I need to get right so that I am a healthy person contributing to the collective. And I think that's a good way to view it. But that's the way I viewed it, and it was really helpful.
I had lots of anger, depression, self-hate, lots of stuff that lots of Native folks have. And, you know, I really got this idea in my mind that everything I figure out in myself, I can help another person figure out with themselves. And that became this motivational fire for me. So
I want to thank you. We could have gone on forever, dang it.
We could have.
But I'm just going to make sure that in closing, I give people your URL, your website. It's Cliff Ponca. That's spelled CLIFFPONCA. .com. So thanks for joining us on Inner Life. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Cliff.
Thank you.